just so y'all know, this entire podcast is a spoiler warning. So if you haven't seen any of the movies, stop here.
It's like a week old milk. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Phantom Podcast. I am Biggie. Next to me, I have Jake from State Farm.
What's
next
up?
To him is Slim Jesus.
What's going on, everybody?
G-Money
in I'm here. Always on the track.
And Slim, why don't you take away? What are we talking about today?
So today, we're going to be going over basically the history of the Mandalorians, kind of giving you a more in-depth detail of kind of who they are, where they came from, and kind of just a quick overview so you can understand them a little bit better.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to start this off with a quote from the Mandalorian armor from the season one of the Disney Plus original, The Mandalorian. It says, "When one chooses to walk the way of Mandalore, you are both hunter and prey. How can one be a coward if one chooses this way of life?" So the Mandalorian people will start all the way back thousands and thousands of years before the Battle of Yavin.
Old Republic,
right? This is actually pre-Old Republic. So this is before the Republic actually took over the galaxy, and it was just a bunch of planets out there existing. So it all starts on the planet Coruscant. So you may remember Coruscant from the prequel trilogy where the Jedi Temple is, and it's the whole city. Well, thousands and thousands of years ago, it was the home of people that would later become Mandalorians. But do you remember the name of the indigenous people? It started with a T. I don't have it with me.
I cannot remember it off the top of my head, but there was a group of people indigenous to that planet.
But interesting, after that, but eventually, when space travel was becoming more widespread throughout the galaxy, humans actually came in and conquered Coruscant. That's why we see so many humans on Coruscant in the prequel trilogy. They basically ran that species out of the planet. And they ended up having to find a new planet, the planet of Mandalore.
Ta-da!
Right? And for them, they call themselves Mandalorians-ish.
Yeah.
They still call themselves that, but they dubbed themselves Mandalorians when they took over the indigenous planet. They actually had to defeat the primary species of that planet called the Mythosaur.
Yeah.
So if you ever seen the movies, you know Boba Fett's signature skull on the back of his shoulder plate. That is the skull of the Mythosaur. So the Mythosaur was this giant dragon-like being, and there was several of them living on the planet of Mandalore. They were the primary species. The Mandalorians took over the planet by basically wiping them out of existence,
which was not an easy feat.
No,
I mean, that took quite a while to do.
It took them many years and their best warriors to do it, but eventually they did it, and they would lay out the bones of the Mythosaur, claiming to everybody on the planet that they were now the primary species.
Yeah, it was kind of like, all right, we own this place now, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, like we will literally kill you and take over.
Yeah, exactly. It was a warning to everybody else out there. This is our turf now.
Right.
Go away.
This is where the whole war mentality kind of starts. Them kind of taking over, and they get this. All right. Yeah.
It definitely was the first seedlings of that, and you can definitely see it carry on through many of the Mandalorian traditions from this point forward. You know.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting to see that we get to see a lot of that, especially in the Clone Wars, and definitely in the Mandalorian Disney Plus original show too. And it's a really cool sense of like warriorship that they get from that, but they get it. They definitely get a lot more after the Mandalorian Wars, and this is just kind of the beginning of that though.
Right. So from there, they find on planet Mandalore the primary kind of export that's going to be. Is Beskar. Beskar iron, Beskar steel. It's called very different things in several different places. But Beskar
is what it's most commonly known as.
Right, just Beskar.
So we're just going to call it Beskar for the sake of this podcast.
So Beskar was the metal they found there, and it can deflect blaster bullets. It can deflect, obviously, regular stuff, such as, regular bullets, knives, stuff like that, vibroblades, and lightsaber attacks.
Yeah, hence making it extremely valuable, and you get to see in the Disney Plus original, hence why it is so valuable to the Mandalorian himself in that show.
Right, that's why he would take on this expensive journey and get paid in Beskar.
Exactly, because it meant more than just metal to him.
It wasn't just the metal that was useful for it, but Beskar literally belonged to him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was getting back what belonged to him.
Yeah.
So So after that, the Mandalorians started kind of exploring around the galaxy, we'll say, And they started doing some stuff, going on other their neighboring planets and being like, hey, you know what? Their moon, they went to their moon and started mining their moon for Beskar.
Yeah.
We actually see that in the Clone Wars. That's where the Death Watch is banished.
Yeah, that's where their hideout is. While
on the moon of Concordia.
Yeah, while Obi-Wan and Satine are trying to track them down and
right.
kind of quiet that whole regiment of,
right.
of Mandalorians up.
So eventually they adapt into wearing armor for their battles. Now they had to go battle against people, and this is where we first see the T-visor.
Yeah,
T-visor that's so prominent in Star Wars.
Now they started just so y'all know. They started making and wearing this armor. This is still before Old Republic. This is still
this thousands
of years ago. This
right.
is not anything current. So
no.
they have been wearing this armor for an extremely long period of time
right.
currently. But we're kind of at the point where they just started making it and it's still
right.
very new.
The reason it was a T-visor is because the indigenous species had a triangular head.
Yes.
With eyes on the left, right, and then a long middle section down their face. So the T-visor was actually shaped more to their head. Which
you can kind of see the theme on the chest plate as well if you look at it really closely. It's kind of all over their armor. They're very symbolic people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really reflects their traditions back to those indigenous people that were the first Mandalorians.
Yeah.
So as they were going out, they ended up getting – this is right around the time the Republic, what we call now the Old Republic, but the first Galactic Republic was started. And in this, the Republic came in and they started taking over the inner core.
Yeah,
and the Mandalorians are still more on the mid to outer core, or outer rim, excuse me. And so the inner core really hasn't affected them. But
not yet.
But from this point on, the Mandalorians seek expansion.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
can
you blame them, though? Can you kind of blame them for wanting
no.
just a little bit more?
Right. And because, you know, they think, oh, wait, no, if it's been this easy so far, let's just keep doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I think they just got power hungry,
right.
you know.
And from here, they actually have their first leader called Mandalore, right? He just calls himself the Mandalore.
That was his name.
Right. It wasn't Mandalore the Ultimate. Mandalore the Ultimate. There were several the Mandalores. Mandalore the Ultimate, Mandalore this and that, and all symbolized their role in the society.
Yeah, exactly.
So from here, we see the start of what we call the Mandalorian Wars. This is where the Republic and Mandalore basically really fight a pretty violent war.
It's a pretty big war. But before we kind of get into that, we have been moving kind of fast. Jake or Biggie, do y'all want to touch on anything?
Questions?
Is there anything we kind of skipped over? Something you don't kind of understand? Something you think the audience might want to know up until this point? Because we have been kind of moving through this topic very
right.
quickly.
This Asian history.
Yeah.
So I know, like, I was watching a video, I think, didn't they say something like the Mandalorians weren't just like full human, but they weren't they like,
yeah, so,
sorry.
So yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, right after the start of the Mandalore Wars, the Mandalorians saw that they were being depleted, and they were actually facing extinction because of, you know, their forces being depleted. So they start what is going to be the rest of the history of Mandalore that we know of. Where they say Mandalore is no longer a race, but it's a people.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes back to that quote I started at the beginning, where Din Djarin in the new Mandalorian series says as well, it's not just a people, it's a creed.
Yeah.
And
you will see themes of the saying that G-Money quoted earlier in the podcast. You'll see themes of that throughout the entire Mandalorian history. It's very... That quote applies to many aspects of them as a people and as warriors themselves.
Yeah.
It really speaks to them as a whole. I think we want to get into the Mandalorian war at this point.
Yeah.
This is a big topic to cover.
This is
nothing small that you can just kind of
mention. No, that's why I kind of rushed to this beginning part because, you know.
Just to give you a quick overview of kind of who they are and how they got to this point specifically.
Right. How they ended up getting to this war.
Exactly.
This war was actually there was the Mandalorian War, the Sith Republic War,
so
the
one,
Clone Wars, and then the Imperial War.
Yeah.
And the first. So this is the first of five major wars in the galaxy.
Actually, the one right before this was the Great Sith War.
Oh,
that
is very true.
That is one to not forget.
Yes.
So this one takes place, it starts in 3976 BBY. And for those who don't know, that's before the Battle of Yavin.
Or the events of Episode 4.
Exactly. And so that's a reference point, BBY, that's going to be used a lot throughout this podcast.
So when you hear us say BBY, just think before the episode in New Hope.
Yeah. Before the Battle of Yavin or Episode 4, however you kind of want to think about it, that's just kind of a reference point. So 3,976 years before Episode 4 is when this war happened. So long, long time ago. Many generations,
right?
And this was a really big war between the Mandalorians and the Republic. There was a lot of planets involved, you know, that kind of switched between Republic and Mandalorian control back and forth. It wasn't just one or two planets they were fighting over. This was like control of the galaxy at this point.
Right.
There were so many. That's why it was such a big war, and it definitely changed the tide whenever the Jedi got involved, which they didn't mean to, because if I recall correctly, Revan and his friend Malak at the time went into battle against the Jedi Council's wishes.
The Jedi Council this time said, we're not getting involved with the war, because they really don't want to be tied with the Republic at this point.
Yeah.
They're like, the Republic is the Republic, we're the Jedi, we're totally separate.
And that's how we ended up with the prequels and the Jedi Council being tied to the Republic and the Senate.
Yes.
This is kind of the very starting and seedlings of that kind of idea that
this,
the Jedi and the Republic were one.
This is the start of where the Jedi Council gets tied to the Republic and ends up being kind of
the Senate's war
turned into a political asset.
Yeah, that it would have totally changed the history and the outcome of the Jedi if they had not gotten involved with the Mandalorian War, which is another reason why it was such a big turning point in the history of the galaxy.
It basically changed the Jedi from third-party, unbiased peacekeepers to Republic soldiers.
Yeah, exactly. And not to mention, not only was it Revan and Malak at the time, but they also collected many other Jedi to follow them and lead an army against the Mandalorians. So it wasn't just one or two that were kind of going rogue.
Right.
It was a handful. It was quite a few of them. And at this time, the Jedi were much more powerful within the Force and, you know, as warriors.
Right.
So they definitely did a lot more damage.
Right. I like to think of this as, the balance of the Force. At this time, there's, you know, the Sith aren't extinct like the Jedi. I thought in the prequels, there's quite a few dark side users. There's dark Jedis.
They just got over the Great Sith War.
Right. And so a lot of this, you know, there's still a pretty good balance of the Force. There's a lot of people using it.
Yeah.
But it's pretty balanced overall.
Yeah.
So the Jedi aren't clouded by the dark side. They're not, you know, as Mace Windu says, their ability to use the Force is diminished. So we don't see any of those effects.
For right now.
Right. I do love, whenever I see Old Republic stuff, proto-packs. I think I said this in a previous episode, where like the first episode I wanted was proto-packs. Do you guys know what proto-packs are?
Not a clue.
I kind of do. I understand.
So proto-packs are like the first kind of lightsaber you see. So a lightsaber needs a lot of power, right? You know, this stuff doesn't just run on like AAA batteries.
Right. Oh, that'd be dope.
That would be. I mean, the ones that Disney do, but not these, right?
Those are double A. Get it right.
Hey. Okay. But yeah, so they needed an incredible source of power. So they would have basically an extension cord plugged into this giant power bank on their belt.
Ooh.
So your lightsaber was kind of limited, especially your moves with a lightsaber. You know, you see the fancy stuff in the prequels. You really can't do that with an extension cord plugged into your
Right.
They're fighting probably more like, you know, the Obi-Wan, Darth Vader in Episode 4.
And that's why it took so long for the fighting styles of the lightsaber to
progress. Like you see, this is basically Form 1, and Form 1 is so basic because they were tied down. Literally.
We'll go over all the forms in another episode.
That's a whole other episode.
Yeah, but Form 1 is very basic moves, blocking. Basic defense,
basic offense, like kind of like you think about like Big E over there said with the Darth Vader Obi-Wan fight in Episode 4.
Nothing fancy whatsoever.
Literally, it's almost comparable to fencing today, where you see just a couple of hits and then someone gets their hand chopped off.
Yeah, that's basically what it was, and it was because of the proto packs because they were so limited.
Right.
I completely forgot where we're at. We went off on a tangent.
We're at the start of the Mandalorian Wars. We see Revan and Malak recruit Jedi, and we're going off, and the Jedi Council has just entered the war with the Republic to fight the Mandalorians.
Exactly. So here's something you probably might not have known about the Mandalorian Wars. The Republic had a super weapon in this war, unlike what we see in the movies, where the Imperial or the Sith always had like a super weapon.
Right.
This time it was the Republic, and it was called the Mass Shadow Generator. Oh, and it was created by an engineer called, and I'm sorry if I butcher this name, is Baudur. It's B-A-O-D-U-R.
I mean, he doesn't exist, so I don't think he's going to get offended.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get offended, but I'm sorry if he does. And it was activated.
The guy who wrote it.
Yeah, and it was activated, and basically what it did is it sucked a bunch of Mandalorian and Republic warships into, like, a gravity vortex, you know?
Right, basically a black hole.
Yeah, it basically created a black hole, and they kind of aimed it towards the Mandalorians, but it kind of got a few of the Republic's
right.
ships
I mean, it's
of their
black
own.
Hole, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, it was, yeah, exactly. You can't really kind of aim it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. They were kind of like, it's a risk we're willing to take, as long as it defeats more of their ships than it does. Ours will
right.
win, and that's exactly the effect that it had. It got rid of so many Mandalorian ships versus Republic ships that the Mandalorians, at that point, they surrendered. They were like, okay, yeah, you got us. And at that point, after that happened, to further demoralize the Mandalorians, really, Revan executed Mandalore the Ultimate, who was currently the Mandalore, quote-unquote,
right.
at this time.
Right.
And there was something called the Mask of Mandalore, which was very important to the Mandalorians.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically kind of like something to rally around,
mm-hmm.
like a leader, something the leader
right.
would carry. We're not going to worry about that right now, but it's something that the Mandalorians rallied around for a very long time, especially in war.
Think of it like a flag or a national symbolic.
Yeah,
piece.
Exactly. But Revan hid the mask and refused to tell the Mandalorians where it was. So they scattered, and this is how the Mandalorians got so scattered over various different planets through the Mandalorian system.
Right.
So they scattered looking for it, and it basically doomed them to become bounty hunters and assassins for the rest of time until they found this mask, which we have never seen. So they never
right.
really found it.
And another thing about Revan and the mask is when Revan's first started in the Mandalorian Wars, he picked up a mask off a dead Mandalorian woman, and he wore it the entire time, and he said he would never take it off until he beat the Mandalorians.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why we always see Revan with that amazing T-visor helmet. Makes
exactly.
his character way cooler.
Kind of explains kind of why the T is in his mask as well as the Mandalorian's mask.
Right. It's like, you're wearing an enemy helmet? Yes, but for a very good reason.
Yeah, he's like, he can kind of back up what he's saying at that
right.
point.
And then it just basically is like, ha ha ha, I'm wearing your mask now. Look
yeah.
at this.
So I'm about to go off a little bit on the character of what is about to be Darth Revan, because like I've said before and earlier,
at this point, just Revan Jedi Knight.
Yeah, he's a Jedi Knight at this point, but he is soon to be Darth Revan, which is has to be my favorite Star Wars character,
yeah.
just of all time, because his story arc and you know the powers that he has
yeah.
and his storyline and what he does as a character, absolutely amazing.
Right? Can
That's
I say
my
something?
Personal opinion.
Darth Revan, we don't see a lot of him, to be honest.
Sadly, it's very sad,
but. He has such. That's all he's. How good of a story he has when people have him as their favorite character, even though he's not in as many stories as Luke Skywalker, Darth
exactly.
Vader, or
and he hasn't been canon until very recently.
Right. I think we talked about this slightly at Rise of Skywalker in our first episode, where they actually were naming Sith.
Sith lords that officially became canon
yeah Sith
in
lords
that movie.
That, so basically. The group
there
of
was
soldiers. I cannot think of the word for a group of soldiers. Regiment or something like that. Anyways, the regiment of the Sith warriors on the Battle of Exegol were named after ancient Sith lords.
Yeah.
By Sith worshippers, basically, on the planet of Exegol.
And there was a handful of them besides Revan that became canon.
Yeah.
But they're not. I don't want to diss the other Sith, you know, but they're not as noteworthy at this point in time.
Right. There's like, there's...
You can go and
yeah.
you can find their names, but at this point, it's
I think
it's
the only other one
that
I even knew was the Master of Plagueis, who was the Master of Palpatine.
Exactly.
And he wasn't even that big. He basically just,
oh,
like,
it's Palpatine's Grandmaster.
Right. And he basically, all he did was just die and make Plagueis. So.
Exactly. And we kind of needed Plagueis for Palpatine to happen, and that gave us the entire Star Wars franchise that we
right.
have today, which is super cool. Anyway, but kind of back to Darth Revan
yep,
and his involvement with the Mandalorian Wars, and why this is about to get so interesting. So before this, we've had the Great Sith War, which is something completely on its own. And then we had the Mandalorian War where Revan disobeyed the Jedi Council. And at this point, it was his biggest act of defiance. We know that Revan has always struggled with his allegiance to the Jedi. He's always been kind of back and forth, especially throughout his history.
Very rebellious.
Couldn't really make up his mind, so to speak. But this was his biggest act of, like, you know, kind of giving the Jedi Council the middle finger and kind of doing whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And getting other people involved on it on a scale that had, like, made a whole war happen over, like, the entire galaxy's
yeah.
fate. That's pretty big.
That is.
That's a pretty big thing to do. So he defeats Mandalore the Ultimate. He hides the mask. He scatters the Mandalorians for, you know, a couple hundred years. Right? If,
right.
you know, I can't remember if they ever found that mask or not, but that's not important.
That's not really.
As of right now. So he does some pretty serious damage to the Mandalorians and you know, and their entire culture and their people. But the weird thing is shortly after that, he leaves the Jedi. Like, he leaves the Order, he leaves, I don't think he was on the Council, I think he was a knight at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, he's a knight.
So he left the Order, he left the Jedi and everything, and he took a couple of Jedi that he took to the war with him, Malak being one of them.
Right.
And there are a couple of Old Republic videos on YouTube that you watch where you get to see Malak and Revan fight against the Jedi. Exactly 1 year after the Mandalorian Wars ended is when Revan attacked the Jedi, and that war started,
mm-hmm.
which was really interesting because you got to think about it. Revan, in the matter of a year, completely turned an entire group of Jedi into Sith, and they each gained numerous different abilities and then mm-hmm. grew the ability to attack the Jedi, which they are previously a part of.
Right.
That's it. In a single year, that's a lot to accomplish. I mean, we already knew Revan was powerful, but that just shows his leadership on a completely different level. You know what I'm saying? And so, at this point, there's been no real peace for the Jedi.
Because mm-hmm.
then they got dragged into the Mandalorian Wars. And that lasted quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, we said that war started in
3976
BBY.
76.
And it ended in 3964. That's not right. No, it ended in... Huh. I cannot remember exactly, but it lasted over 10 years. It was a 10-plus
right.
year war.
A long war.
It was extremely long, and not even half of that. Like, literally a tenth of the length of that war, Revan came back and started another one. So the Jedi's forces were already depleted at
right.
this point.
Yeah.
He attacked them when they were vulnerable, which was a risky move, and he was officially Darth Revan at that point.
Yeah.
He was full turn Sith.
Yeah. So it's interesting how he actually turned to the dark side, because at the end of when he faced the Mandalore the Ultimate, and he found out from the Mandalore the Ultimate before he killed him that a Sith Lord orchestrated this whole war.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, okay, so he goes out searching for the Sith Lord, and then he ends up getting captured by the Sith, and then he ends up turning to Sith.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, in basically one-tenth of the war, he's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to get a bunch of Sith and start another Sith war.
Yeah. But he had so much inside information on the Jedi, it wasn't even funny because he just left.
Right.
Like, not a lot could happen.
He knew their
battle
plans. He knew the people. He knew their tactics.
He knew the forces were depleted. And it's not, and the, like,
that's why he attacked so soon.
That's exactly why he attacked so soon, because he knew the Jedi couldn't replenish their forces within
right.
that short of a span of a time.
Right.
And so, if you think about it, the Jedi saw no real era of peace. Even after, the war between Darth Revan and the Sith and the Jedi and all that,
mm-hmm.
then we get into, you know, the prequels.
Yeah.
They really
only had the 1,000 years of peace from when they thought the Sith were extinct, and then Darth Bane started the rule too.
Exactly.
That was the only really time of peace in Jedi history.
Which, in the long run, if you look at the timeline, that's not a lot.
It's not. When we're talking about 4,000 years between there.
Yeah, exactly. Only having 1,000 of those being semi-peaceful at best. I mean, the Jedi were still peacekeepers, so they still had
conflict. Right. There was no war, but they still had conflict.
Yeah, exactly. Because they dealt with more than just major wars within
right.
the galaxy.
Trade Federation disputes.
We all know what that led to.
The negotiations were short.
So can I ask you guys some? All right, so I was doing some reading while y'all were talking. And so I got a couple of things I just want to say that I thought were cool. Like how Obi-Wan's like relationship with the Duchess. I read up on that. I had no idea. That Obi-Wan Qui-Gon, yeah, Duchess Sistine.
Sistine without the L.
Sistine. All right. How they had a like relationship long before, like before, like, they even met Anakin or nothing.
Yeah. The Clone Wars, they did.
Like, I feel bad for the Mandalorian. They've almost got extinct, like, 3 or 4 times. Like,
yeah.
When they're, like, as like when they first started and they had, like, say it was more of a people, not, like, a race, like, a like culture.
It's a culture.
And then also, when they're helping Duchess Satine, like, before, Satine, like, she had to rebuild her people from, like, the bottom up, like, with, like, because they almost went extinct again. And aren't they, like, in the Mandalorian, they're almost extinct, too?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and that's, I mean, we can cover that more in-depth, I think, a little bit later.
Right.
Was there anything y'all were confused on that we kind of, like, went over? We did kind of rush to the beginning, and then we went through a lot of information within the last, like, 15 minutes over the Mandalorian Wars. There's a lot of stuff
we got to cover. So I think we should cover the last few minutes of this podcast. I think let's go ahead and cover part of, I don't know, after the Mandalorian Wars, they basically dispersed, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And we see that, you know,
pretty much doomed to be bounty hunters and other things of that.
Right, and Mandalore is still there, but it's full of civil wars. It's a mess. There's really no leader after Mandalore, after the Mandalore, the Ultimate.
No, there's never an official leader after that. No, the true, real Mandalorian leader.
Right, until Cult of the Clone Wars.
Now, do you think that if Mandalorian acted more like they are at the beginning of warmongering people, instead of more like a democratic society, let's think of this through. Would they, like, last longer or better off?
So as we go on, we see the Mandalorians come in, and Obi-Wan's there, which is Satine, like you said, and she's basically trying to unify her people, right? She's using absolutely no violence.
Which goes against a lot of what the Mandalorians believe.
Right, that's why we see
Death Watch. That's why it was so controversial and so hard to do.
That's why we see people like Death Watch and the Visit Clan, all that, not like Satine. But she did save her people in a way. She conserved the people on the planet Mandalore. Yeah. But in doing so, she severely damaged the Mandalorian culture. Which, in my opinion, is what needed to be kept, because the Mandalorians aren't just the people on the planet of Mandalore, but it's the creed, it's the culture, it is the way. Like, this, it is the way.
As much as you would like to...
It is the way.
Like, this is the way. As much as I would like to like Satine as a character, the way history looks upon her for saving, like you said, G, the people themselves instead of what the Mandalorians stood for in their culture... It definitely doesn't sit right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And before we wrap this up, I think there's two things we need to go over before we wrap this podcast up.
Right.
The first and most important one being, is just Boba Fett is not a Mandalorian. And neither is Jango Fett is technically
he was a disgraced Mandalorian.
He was kind of disowned. And you got to do some bad stuff to be disowned by the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Which he kind of earned. But just because you wear the armor does not make you a Mandalorian, hence why Boba Fett is not an actual Mandalorian.
And you know what, I think we need to talk about, this should be part one of a two-part series in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Next week we'll do part two.
There's a lot of content.
What we'll do is we'll talk next week.
More on the Fets.
We'll talk about post-Mandalorian War, and we'll go on and we'll talk about the dispersion, the Civil Wars, and ultimately the Fets.
Maybe some other things, because we probably go off track.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Before we wrap this up, we do have Q missing today. Sadly, he's sleeping somewhere.
Rest in peace.
he's not dead yet. He's just kind of sleeping.
Oh, if he keeps sleeping, he might be dead.
Oh, no. But we do miss him, and he will definitely be back for the next podcast. You'll hear from him soon. Don't worry, guys. I think that's going to be it for today. Yep. Slim is signing off.
All right. I'm G Money.
Jake from State Farm.
All right, and I'm Big E. We will see you next week on the Phantom Podcast.
You got the blue Gatorade.
Thank you for listening to the Phantom Podcast this week. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Please don't forget to rate or review wherever you are. Give us 5 stars. It really helps out. Thank you again for listening to the Phantom Podcast with Slim Jesus, Jake from State Farm, Big E, and G Money. Hope you had a good time. Let's do it again.